top of the pile. It is as dead as all the others. As Robespierre gives orders to his guard, she places her hands over her ears.
Henri, bring me that head.
But, monsieur, its eyes have opened.
What? Now, Monsieur Orpheus, sing to them.
Triuthoiado eman ton bono din libin. Aptos pumisun to clamabo athikan mes din thikin don thimon.
My ears were covered, but I could not entirely obliterate the sounds the head made as it began its song. The head sang first of blood, of the baying, senseless cries of the mob, of the worm that devours its own flesh. Then it sang of freedom, of liberty, of love. And as it sang, other voices were also raised in jagged unison, the voices of the dead.
Eleftheria Irinia in Thetha Bethanun Otikenaini.
The entire pile of heads is now singing.
Eleftheria Irinia in Thetha Bethanun Otikenaini.
Lady Joanna keeps her hands over her ears.
The ghastly chorus sang of those who lead, of those who, by virtue or circumstance, are raised above the crowd, who manipulate the commonalty, will they or nill they. It sang of a dream and of the ending of the dream. I am not able to conceive what it must have been like to hear that song unprotected. Monsieur Saint-Just and Monsieur Robespierre and their manservant stood and listened, like statues, like men entranced. The song ceased, and still they stood there.
She walks to the pile of, now silent, heads and picks up Orpheus's. Saint-Just and Robespierre remain fixated, catatonic, frozen.
And taking what I had come for, I left that place.
Oh, steady, Destrier. Halt, who goes?
Oh, my apologies, Chevalier. I'll borrow your coat and hat. Yes. Good, and thank you for the loan of your horse.
Johanna Constantine left Paris shortly after dawn on that day, 8th Thermidor, year 2, with the head of Orpheus gently cradled on her saddle. In the National Convention, the Assembly of Deputies, events moved swiftly to bring the terror to an end.
Fellow Jacobin, deputies of this great...
On the 9th Thermidor, Louis-Antoine Saint-Just, the great orator, faltered during his speech before the National Convention and fell silent. While Lady Joanna, disguised as a soldier, galloped across the fields of France, the sack in front of her on the saddle, to the place where she had hidden her true clothing.
Citizens! Citizens! Allow Citizen Saint-Just a chance to speak! Are we not?
In the National Convention, Maximilien Robespierre, the most powerful man in France, attempts to restore order. Until this point, he has been listened to with awe, or fear, or silence. Now, for the first time, he finds himself laughed at, and also for the first time, he is lost for words. That night, he and his faction are deposed and arrested, and during the arrest, Robespierre is shot in the jaw. Or perhaps he fumbled a suicide attempt. The truth here is a matter of conjecture. It is, however, a matter of record that the next day, his shattered jaw bound by a paper bandage, Robespierre watched Saint-Just step up, silently, to the guillotine. Not far off, Lady Joanna Constantine, now dressed as an English noblewoman, climbed into a stagecoach, carrying a large leather bag.
What is our first stop, coachman?
Dijon at nightfall, and the Swiss border by the next night.
Excellent.
Would you like your bag stowed on the roof, citizeness?
No, thank you. It's far too precious.
And it is also a matter of record that, at the very last, Monsieur Sanson, the executioner, ripped off the paper bandage that had held Robespierre's jaw together. And that Robespierre's final wordless scream of pain was cut off with his head by the fall of the weighted blade. The terror died with him. September the 9th, 1794. Naxos. A temple stands on a hill, surrounded by olive groves, with the blue, transparent Aegean Sea far below, stretching to the horizon. Lady Joanna Constantine stands with a priest in a white robe. In the priest's hands, facing her, eyes open, is the head of Orpheus.
The priest will take care of me. I stayed on this island for many years before I was stolen. It'll be good to rest once more. And my mother still comes by, from time to time.
Very well.
Joanna?
Yes.
Will you see my father again?
I would hope so. After all, there is still the matter of my fee to be discussed.
Joanna, he must care for me. Do you not think so? If my father did not care for me, he would not have had you rescue me.
I do not know.
I trust that he will repay you adequately for your time and trouble in assisting me.
What we obtain too cheap, we esteem too lightly, Orpheus.
True. But when you see him, tell him I miss him. I have not seen him for so long.
Not even in your dreams?
Not even in my dreams. Take me to my resting place, priest.
Yes, Lord.
Orpheus, I travel widely. Perhaps in a year or so I could return to Naxos, see you again. What do you think?
I do not think that would be a good idea, Joanna. Goodbye.
I never saw him more. But as the years have passed, I have, on occasion, seen him in my dreams. And from that time on, the song of Orpheus has always hovered at the edge of my perception, a melody I can never truly recapture, try howsoever I will. And do not doubt that there are many in authority to whom I would sing it if 'twere within my power.
Αυτός που μίσουν το κλάμα από αθήκαν μες την θήκη των θυμών. Δεν ξέρουν πότε να σταματήσουν. Ως χωρίς λογική των θύμων του κοσμούντος κουλική υποτρώεται. Ελευθερία ειρήνια ειν θε θα πεθάνουν ότι Θοιάδο εμάν τον πόνο την λυπή αυτός που μίσουν το κλάμα από αθήκαν μες την θήκη των θυμών.
The year is 47 BCE. The boy is 16. He is not titled yet, not hailed as emperor, not known as Augustus, merely Caius Octavius. He is not crying. He is no barbarian, no Greek to give in to his feelings, to his fears. He waits, listening for a footfall, for a sound. He lies awake in the darkness. Not crying.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 10, August.
From the memoirs of Lysias the Little, written in the year 60, Common Era.
I am old now, and I no longer fear anything life could hold for me. I fear nothing save death, the great inevitable. And my death is not far distant. Thus the time has come in these memoirs for me to chronicle certain matters I know of. And I am the only one alive who knows them.
It is year 7, Common Era. Dawn breaks over Imperial Rome. Lysias, young and clean-shaven, walks through the deserted streets. Around him stand the imposing buildings of the heart of the Roman Empire. Lysias is in his 20s, an adult of not much more than 2 feet in height. He is comely in aspect and dressed in a tunic and toga. Under one arm, he carries a basket containing a jug and a bowl. Under his other arm is a bundle of what look like old rags. He arrives at the gate to the imperial residence.
Who goes there? Declare yourself!
It is I, Lysias the Little.
Show your authorization, little Lysias.
Here, a signet ring from the Emperor himself.
The things I write, I witnessed directly, or I was told, by our first Emperor, who was a man and is now a god.
Pass, Lysias.
Thank you.
I speak of he who was born Caius Octavius, who later took the name Caius Julius Caesar Octavius. He who, later still, the whole of the world, Roman and barbarian, was to know as the Emperor Augustus.
Lysias walks through the entrance hall to the atrium at the center of Augustus's villa. The quadrangle is lined with pillars and open to the sun, with shrubs around the central fountain with its shallow pool.
Who is it?
The Emperor's wife, Livia, is striking to look at and a force to be reckoned with.
You? What foolishness brings you here?
Lady Livia, you're up early. I am here on the Emperor's orders.
Oh, yes, I was afraid of that. It seems there is no limit to the number of outcasts and undesirables he invites to the palace. What's your name again?
Lysias, ma'am.
Lysias.
Lysias the Little.
Anyone with eyes in their head can see that. Lysias, I know you. You're of noble birth, aren't you?
My parents are both from patrician families.
Their coupling must have offended the gods mightily if you were the result. Oh, well. You'll find him through there.
A moment, whoever you are.
The Emperor Augustus is in his 60s. A good-looking man, tall, powerful, and handsome. Beside the parchment roll he writes on is a breakfast of dried grapes and bread. His toga is plain, but for a purple border.
Ah, Lysias. Have you brought everything?
Yes, sir.
What is it?
They call it the Skuldrum Dodge, sir. You need to undress, though.
Oh. And, you actors? Learn this?
No, sir. This is from Persia, sir. A merchant showed it to me. Some of their beggars mutilate themselves to live. But a few do this instead, sir.
Please, lad. Not sir. Not today. Today, I must be Caius.
Yes. Caius.
What strange paste is in your pot?
This is soap. A mixture of bone and fat and ashes. The women use it to clean clothes in the river. But we smear it on our faces and arms. Like this. Take a handful. Spread it over yourself.
Oh, it smells foul, dwarf.
Lysias. If you are Caius, then I am Lysias. And beggars have never been renowned for their fragrance.
My apologies, Lysias.
There. It should dry quickly. Then we sprinkle on a bit of this. Close your eyes.
Oh, foul. It smells like vinegar.
It is vinegar. Now I sprinkle some on myself and see? The soap blisters. And to any passerby, your skin appears burned and ulcerated.
Oh, remarkable. Quicker than boiled asparagus.
Now we put on the old rags.
Well, at least they smell clean.
Well, are you ready, sir?
Caius, please, remember that today we are beggars together, friend Lysias. My eye patch, please.
A nice touch.
Now, let us see what the market has in store for us. Do beggars usually whistle so happily, Lysias?
Sorry.
It's early. The sun is low, but rising. Lysias and Augustus walk down the empty street together. A slave, leading a laden donkey, passes in the other direction. On either side stand imposing buildings with marble pillars and heroic statues.
That's a lovely temple.
The Temple of Avenging Mars? Indeed. How old are you, Lysias?
22, sir. Caius.
Ah. You would not remember Rome as it was when I was younger. I'm almost 70. The gods have given me long life. I paid for that temple, Lysias, as I built so much of Rome. And others followed my example. I found it in brick, and I have left it clad in finest marble.
There's some food in my pouch, Caius, if you're hungry.
I have eaten dried dates, a few raisins, a glass of watered wine. That will satisfy me until this evening. I seldom eat much.
Really? Gosh, I thought that, well, you'd eat lark's tongues and sow's udders. All that fancy stuff. I would if I were emperor. Then I'd go throw it up and be back again for more.
But you are not emperor, are you, Lysias? And until the sun sets tonight, neither am I.
The marketplace is just down here.
Did you not hear me say that I built most of this?
The stall holders are putting up their trestles. Try and stay upwind of the fish.
Will this do? We can sit upon these steps.
Yes, excellent.
Here's our bowl.
Ah, but you never put down an empty begging bowl, Caius. Put in a penny, and the others will follow it.
Huh. And this is something else you actors learn, eh?
Beggar's law. Not actors, Caius.
Actors. I don't like actors. It's a profession based on lies and disrespect. Pretending to be what you are not.
No. You haven't been good to actors, have you? You ban men of noble birth from the stage.
I let you remain on the stage, Lysias.
I'm the only one. And look at my size. What else am I going to do?
I see your point. Today, I need an actor. Today, I too am an actor.
Yes. Well, let's hope you do better than Pylades, eh?
Pylades was a dolt. He deserved his banishment.
He only gave the audience the finger when they hissed him. You didn't have to banish him. I've heard people be rude as shit to you. You didn't bat an eyelid.
I'm a man. I matter little. Pylades was disrespectful to Rome. He was lucky I didn't have him killed. Actors. Thank you, citizen. May the gods bless you and give you virtuous children.
It is now 9 in the morning, and the market is busy.
Buy my fish! Fresh caught today!
Oh, thank you, citizen. May the gods... Oh, he's gone.
Caius.
Yes?
Why are you doing this?
Oh, I had a dream.
I once had a dream. That gold was buried beneath an olive tree on my father's estate. And I dug for a day, but found nothing.
Ah. Many dreams come through the gates of ivory, Lysias. And they lie. A few dreams come through the gates of horn. And they speak to us truly. Every spring I have terrible dreams. Evil, dark dreams. But they are lies. They are not true dreams.
They are all lies, surely.
Oh, but there are true dreams. My life was once saved in Philippi by a dream. Once the Capitoline Jupiter himself appeared to me in a dream. And then there was the dream that sent me here. If dream it was.
Once I dreamed the divine Julius himself appeared to me on stage. When I forgot my lines. We were appearing in Plautus's Menechmus, playing the twins. Can you believe that? No one could tell us apart. Julius Caesar. I wish I'd known him.
I knew him.
Well, of course you did. He was your father.
Adopted father, Lysias. He was my grandmother's brother. Her name was Julia. I first met him at her funeral.
In life, she gave the tenderest...
The boy is 12. His grandmother's pyre burns fiercely in the summer heat. He reads the oration with pride, pride in his lineage, pride in the Republic. The boy misses his grandmother. He does not cry. The man arrives late. The boy has never seen him before, but there is no mistaking him. Julius Caesar is 46 years old, tall and well-built, with keen, dark brown eyes. His hair is combed forward to conceal his increasing baldness. The man and the boy lock eyes, and young Augustus is enthralled.
Well spoken, boy.
His uncle, his hero, his god.
His eyes. That's what I remember. The first time. His eyes.
Family. It must be nice to have a proper family. Mine are sort of embarrassed by me. They're okay, in their way.
Family. The family is the foundation stone on which the empire is built.
I don't have any children, or a wife. Probably never will.
I don't have children. I have running sores. A daughter who shamed me. My granddaughter, Julia. Her legs must have gaped for half of Rome, men and women.
Poor lepers.
Thank you, lady. May the gods send you many children.
Running sores.
Aren't you going to give him a coin, Marcus?
Why? If it is the gods' will that he cannot work, then let the gods feed him and give him coins.
He'd piss himself if he knew who you really were.
Undoubtedly. But he had a point. We cannot defy the gods.
The gods?
I have three duties, Lysias. I'm head of the state, I'm head of the army, and I am the chief priest.
Sometimes I doubt that the gods exist. I have never seen one. Except during my Eleusinian initiation, I thought I heard voices.
When we are initiated into the mysteries of Eleusis, we see and hear many strange things. No, the gods exist. I have seen them. And there are others who stand behind the gods, those whom even Jupiter must own his superiors.
Eh? Who could be greater than Jupiter, the greatest and most powerful?
Firstly, Terminus, the god of boundaries. Jupiter must bow to him. Boundaries are the most important of things, Lysias. And secondly, but I do not know who they are. They are whispered of in the inner mysteries, the seven, who are not prayed to, who are not gods, who were never men.
Your uncle's head is upon this coin. The divine Julius. He is now a god. I wonder what it's like, being a god.
I will be a god when I die, Lysias. Already they begin to weave stories about me, presaging my divinity. They say my mother Attia fell asleep at the temple of Apollo, and a snake made its way into her womb and fertilized her.
And is it true?
Of course not. My mother was entered by nothing more remarkable than my father's penis.
When I was a boy, I prayed to Mercury of the physicians to make me taller. But I think my prayers were heard by Apollo, who gave me a powerful voice and a good memory and sent me to the stage.
It will be good to be dead, to be a god.
What do you think it will be like?
All my mistakes will be forgotten. All my crimes will be forgiven. Do you know how many men I have personally killed? How many deaths I have ordered?
No.
Neither do I. I lost count. Many, many years ago. I have done many evil things, but they were all to preserve Rome. And I will be a god.
What's the difference between that and what you've got now? I mean, you've got the power of life and death over what? 100 million people. Your rule extends from the stormy coasts of Gaul to the stinking deserts of Judea. Everybody loves you. Well, maybe not everybody, but... You're heaps better than Chaos. You gave the army bounty. You gave the people cheap corn. You gave the whole empire blessed peace. You're practically a god already.
When I'm a god, I will no longer be scared.
The old man thinks on how many times he has awoken in the night, sweating and cold, listening to the silence for one sick moment, afraid that he has fallen back in time, is once more a quivering boy.
No! No! Please! No!
Not again.
In the darkness, fearing that the whole of his life since that black night has been nothing more than a fever's dream.
Storyteller! Here!
Shouting for a storyteller. There is always a storyteller waiting in the anteroom. The old man sleeps alone, but complete solitude scares him.
I'm here, Emperor. What tale would soothe you? Ah, I have it. Once upon a time, there was a great magician.
The gaudy tales of brass men and dragon's teeth will comfort Augustus, and a child again, he sleeps. Now it is noon in the marketplace, which has grown quieter. The two pustulous, stinking beggars are sweating in the heat. The little one drinks from a wineskin.
Ah, wine always helps. Here.
Thank you. Where are they all?
They've gone indoors. It's midday. Only mad dogs, Britons, and beggars stay out in this heat. How much have we made so far?
4 copper asses, a brass dubundius, rather badly clipped, and a cestertius. Probably counterfeit.
It's a good thing we aren't doing it for the money, then. Why are we doing it?
Later.
By 1 in the afternoon, the dust hangs low and choking in the heat of the almost deserted marketplace.
As I said, the first time I met him was at grandmother's funeral. I saw him next when I was 16. He was campaigning in Spain. He sent for me. Oh, I was so excited. In hindsight, the journey must have been a nightmare. But at the time, it was an adventure. A boy's story. I was still convalescing from illness. It was a chapter of disasters. First, we were shipwrecked. Then I was forced to fight my way across country held by the enemy. Just to be with him. He was my uncle, you see. He was the greatest man in the world. He was my hero, and he was Caesar. I spent some time with him in Spain. He was to have taken me on his next expedition. He planned to have me always by his side. But it was not to be.
Caesar, I commend to you this petition to recall my exiled brother.
Not now, Lucius. Where's Mark Antony?
Not here to help you this time.
What is this violence? Casca, you villain, what are you doing?
Help! Brothers, take him!
Brutus! You too, my son!
I went on to Apollonia to wait for him, and it was there that I heard he had been assassinated and had named me as his heir. I was 18, and I left that day for Rome to avenge him.
You must have loved him very much.
No, I hated him.
Ah.
What was it like, Lysias, in the days of the Republic? It was chaos held at bay by a handful of men. Cicero, for example.
The lawyer? My father's told me about him. He was a great man, wasn't he?
Yes, a fine mind and an honorable man. The last of the giants.
Cicero? Whatever happened to him?
I had him killed.
Oh.
I'm not a vain man, Lysias.
I never said you were.
This name I have taken, Augustus. It was not taken from vanity, but from piety, trusting that my reign would augur well for Rome.
You name this month after you, though. It used to be Sextilis. Now it's August. You did that.
And that will not last. In another decade, this month will probably be called Tiberius. We write our names in the sand, and then the waves roll in and wash them away. But we can leave things behind us. I am leaving an empire.
An apple? And it's fresh. God smile upon you, sir. All the stallholders give us is rotten fruit. And that brings the rats. Chew! Why aren't you king?
Names. Names. They offered Julius Caesar the crown, and he refused it. That's reason enough.
Boy! Mind where you're pissing?
Shut up, dwarf.
Kiss my ass. You were saying?
The Romans are a proud people. They would not permit themselves to be ruled by a king. So I call myself Imperator, Commander. And they follow me and obey me as they would a king. People fascinate me, Lysias. It is within my power to give them back a republic. I almost did, twice, when I was scared and weak. And it is within their power to take back all power from me. But they will not. Humanity. They follow leaders, queens or kings, chiefs or emperors. We tell them what to do, and they do it. We know no more than they, but still they follow us, blindly. As people lost in the catacombs would follow a child carrying a flaming torch.
And what do you follow then? You leaders, to make us follow you and obey you.
We follow our dreams.
You, here, 5 asses.
Thank you, sir. That's very generous of you.
Once I was a slave, but I was freed in my master's will, and I took what I had saved and became a wine seller. The gods smiled upon me, and now I own 2 ships and have 50 slaves of my own.
Have you now?
We know not what tomorrow brings. And but for the whim of the goddess Fortuna, I myself might be sitting in the marketplace, begging for copper asses. No man knows the future. It behoves us all to walk with care.
I know the future. Or some of it.
From dreams?
No, from books. When Marcus Lepidus died, I took the office of chief priest. I ordered, brought to me, all the volumes of prophecy.
And?
I read them all. Then I ordered 2,000 of them burnt. The ones I left, I edited and had recopied. The prophecies were obscure, but not that obscure. There are 2 futures, you see. 2 ways that it can go.
Hmm?
In 1 future, the Romans sputter and flare like Greek fire, last a few 100 years, and then are gone, eaten from outside by barbarians. From inside, by strange gods.
Oh.
In the other future, the whole world becomes a province of our empire. The eagle standard will be carried through lands we have barely dreamed of. There are nations beyond the sunset, where we will rule golden ziggurats, and nations to the south, where diamonds lie like robin's eggs upon the ground.
Right.
It will be a fine world, a great and glorious world, and that empire will last for 10,000 years, or more. The prophecies were quite clear on that. They were quite clear on what I had to do.
So let me get this straight. There are 2 futures, and you picked 1 of them from the prophecies and destroyed the others.
Yes. Yes, I did.
So no one else would know?
Caesar knew. Late at night, he would talk to me in Spain, tell me about his dreams. He was a big man, and his dreams for Rome were big.
Another rat, there, by you.
Are you scared of me?
Scared of you? Lord...
Don't call me that.
When I first summoned you, told you what I needed today, that I would be spending a day disguised as a beggar, that you would be by my side. Weren't you scared?
No. Caius.
I'm an old man, but you should fear me. Not because I'm fast. And I am fast. And not because I'm strong. And I am strong.
Gods.
But because if I gave the word tonight, you would disappear. And no one would even dare to mention that you had ever existed. And no one would dare complain. Because the alternative to me is chaos.
All right. I'm scared of you. But I still want to know. What are you doing? Begging in the marketplace.
Because I had a dream.
Ah! Oh, no! Again!
Late one night I woke, as I have woken in the night many times in the past, and I called for a storyteller.
Storyteller! Here!
The man who came was new to me. His face as white as a corpse, his hair as black as his toga. A ruby hung at his throat, his eyes were dark marble with a pinpoint of light floating in each. And yet, I felt I knew him.
You, tell me a story.
A story, Octavian? Very well. There was a child who loved and respected his uncle and who feared the gods. His uncle was a great general.
Go on.
The boy counted the days until he would be old enough to ride out, to follow his uncle to war. When he was 16, and in his own eyes already a man, the boy set off to be with his uncle, to learn the arts of conquest. And then, on his first night in his uncle's camp, weak from illness and excitement, the boy lay in his tent. But something bad happened to him that night.
No. How dare you? Who are you?
I am here to tell you a story, Caius Octavius, because you wake every night screaming.
You're a god.
I am no god, but I am here as a favor to a god.
A favor?
All gods begin in my realm, Caius Octavius. They walk your world for a span, and when they are old, they return to my world to die.
This is a dream.
Of course it's a dream, Octavius.
Who are you, Raven?
When I was a man, I was Aristaeus of Marmora, but that was 700 years ago.
The poet who became Apollo's Raven? Then you are Apollo. I pray you be not Apollo of the torments, but Apollo in some gentler aspect.
I am not Apollo. I am no sun god. But poets and dreamers are my people, and it is not unheard of for poets, dreamers, and gods to be confused. I am no little Roman dream god, no god of rhyme and madness. I am myself.
What will you? What do you want with me, Lord?
There is a way out of your dilemma, Octavius.
My dilemma?
Indeed. I do not do this for you, little emperor. I do it for another who has asked me to intercede on their behalf.
The divine Julius?
Terminus, he who walks the boundaries. He requested that I counsel a way out of your difficulties.
Do they know, then? The gods?
Terminus knows.
Terminus?
You labor under a heavy burden. While you are emperor of Rome, the gods of Rome watch you. And you fear the gods, don't you?
Yes.
But you have plans, Augustus. Plans you do not wish the gods of Rome to know.
Yes.
So, for a day in every year, do not be emperor.
What? But how?
Be a beggar, Augustus. Go to the marketplace and beg for coppers. plan your course on that day when the gods will not be watching.
And then I awoke.
I don't understand. Some man in your dreams told you to come and beg in the marketplace because the gods can't see you thinking. Here.
I believe that's what he was telling me, yes.
And you've been with me here today. What? To think?
Yes.
I don't understand. Which god are you so afraid of?
The divine Julius. My life has been spent following the path he laid out for me. He groomed me for this. He knew of the prophecies. He knew what Rome could become, and he told me, step by step, what I had to do. How I could amass enough personal power to do whatever I needed.
Oh.
Look around you, Lysias. Prosperity, peace, stable government, enough grain to fill every belly in the empire. I have done everything he wanted. I have done everything. Come. Don't forget the bowl.
No, indeed. So what have you decided then?
It's a matter of boundaries. Observe, our empire, my empire, is based on military conquest. As long as new countries are being conquered, as long as the legions have new territories to conquer, then Rome will live.
So?
Terminus is the only god to whom even Jupiter must bow. Ah, here we are. My home. Goodbye, Lysias the Little. We will never speak to each other again. You will not tell anyone of this day or of our talk. Keep the coins.
Goodbye, Augustus Caesar.
Hail, Caesar.
I'm going to sleep. Have a storyteller ready.
Yes, Caesar.
You there, what are you doing in the palace grounds?
Going to bed, wife of mine.
By Castor, is that Augustus under the muck? What have you done to yourself? Are you sick?
No, I'm tired, and I need to wash.
Are you hungry?
Not very.
Would you like me to prepare you something? A dish of figs, perhaps?
No, thank you. Not tonight.
Very well. I'll save them for another time.
So, today I was the actor. Or perhaps today I did not have to act. Oh. Oh. Oh.
The year is 47 BCE. The boy is 16. He sleeps in his own tent. He is tired and he is ill. His uncle comes to his tent in the darkness. His uncle is a great man. The boy is taken, brutally, harshly, there in the night. He offers no resistance.
Please.
His uncle is pleased with him.
Do what I say, and I will adopt you as my son. Do what I say, and you will rule when I am gone. Do what I say, and the world will be yours.
The boy does what he is told. He lies awake in the darkness, night after night, waiting for his uncle, waiting for the pain. And never crying. From the memoirs of Lysias the Little, year 60, Common Era.
That, then, is a true account of the day I spent with the Emperor of Rome, in the month that still bears his name. I passed him in the market, 2 years later, to the day, and I tossed him a coin, and he smiled at me. I am an old man now, and Augustus Caesar has been dead for almost 50 years. But since that day, I have wondered, turning the question over and over in my mind. What could he have been afraid of? And what was he trying to do?
Lysias is sitting at his low table, with a lamp burning, a roll of parchment before him. Opposite the lamp is a small bronze statue.
Augustus's will set the bounds of the empire, forbade any further expansion. And in his will, Augustus also appointed Tiberius as his successor, our divine rulers. Have since then been successively mad, evil, foolish, and now all three. Perhaps he achieved his goal, perhaps not. But still I persist in wondering, what was Augustus afraid of? Why did he wake in the night, screaming?
He looks at the statue. It is of a noble Roman clad only in a toga, holding a spear. It is unmistakably Augustus.
Why was he angry? Why was he scared? I do not know his secret. And Augustus has taken it with him to Olympus or to the grave.
September 1859.
What to do?
The man looking in the mirror in this flea-pit San Francisco hotel room is balding, with sad eyes and mutton-chop whiskers. He used to be a businessman, but his savings and his business have been destroyed by unwise speculation. Joshua Abraham Norton wears a threadbare frock coat with matching vest and pants. His shirt, once white, is grey. A black silk bow hangs limply at his throat. He gazes sadly at his reflection in the cracked mirror on the washstand.
I know hope.
He is sad, he is lonely, and he is hungry. And he holds an opened cutthroat razor in his hand.
Well, Joshua, what are you going to do now?
Sitting cross-legged on Norton's bed, watching him, is despair of the endless.
Suicide? You would not be the first failed businessman to take that route. 10 years ago, you were a rich man. Rich and happy. And now? Now, you're nothing, Joshua.
Despair is naked. her black hair pulled up into a topknot. Her face is wide, flat, and blank. Her teeth are small, sharp things that protrude from her lower jaw even when her mouth is shut. She stares at Norton, who has no idea that she is here.
I am nothing.
Nothing, did I say? No, not nothing. You have potential, Joshua. Potential for despair. Perhaps for more than that.
Despair wears a ring with a fishhook set into it. She holds it up to her face, staring at the hook.
My brother, I do not stand in my gallery. Neither do I hold your sigil in my hand. But I call on you. Dream. Come to your sister.
As if to seal some compact, she draws the hook of the ring across her chest, leaving a line of blood which drips down her heavy breasts.
Come. Come to despair.
You called me, my sister, and I have come.
The Sandman, Act 2, Episode 11. 3 Septembers and a January.
Why have you called me?
I have a challenge for you, my brother Dream. A simple challenge.
Morpheus wears a black suit which could have belonged to a romantic poet of 40 years before, a Byron or a Shelley. There is a pouch of sand at his belt, and his face is chalk white, his long hair black, and the only color in his ensemble is the ruby on a pin in his lapel. Despair sits heavily on Norton's little bed, her chest bloody. Norton stands, lost, in front of the grimy mirror. He has no idea they are there. He cannot see or hear either of them.
What to do?
This man, Joshua, has entered my domain. He is in despair. His life has fallen apart. He sits in this little room contemplating death. But he lacks the courage even for that. Life has hurt him. What can you do with your little dreams to redeem him?
I do not play your games, Despair. I will take no part in this.
You will not, or you cannot. The challenge is not just mine. Desire and delirium will stand with me on this.
No.
I see. You think yourself better than your family, Dream. It is no wonder our brother turned his back on us. You did not care about him. You do not care about us. If you did, he would not have left us.
Oh, very well.
Morpheus reaches into the pouch. As Norton stares, transfixed by the razor blade, Dream blows a handful of dust over him.
Sleep.
Who are you, Joshua? What makes you what you are? What do you dream?
And my dreams, sir? A most peculiar question. But I am Joshua Abraham Norton, entrepreneur and inventor. I dream of the dark day that fortune dealt me an evil hand. A ship full of rice. It was meant to make me truly rich.
Instead, it wiped me out. I dream of that. Sometimes I dream that I'm still respected, still a man of worth. But then I wake. Sometimes when I sleep, I am a boy in Africa, once more, dreaming of the new world where I shall make my fortune. But I came to America, the land of possibilities. It is also a land of chaos and confusion, a country without a king. A country without a king.
Brother, what are you doing?
I am walking with Joshua Norton in dreams. I'm trying to understand him.
Dreams. What are dreams? Dreams are nothing, my brother.
Dreams are nothing, sister. Without dreams, there could be no despair.
But there's nowhere to go anymore. Nothing to dream.
Can you really keep him from my realm? From all our realms? Before our oldest sister comes for him?
Death?
That's the challenge, brother. Already I have my hook in his heart. And what is there to understand? He's mortal. He's nothing.
No.
I don't have anything.
Then I will give you a dream, Joshua.
I don't have anything.
Hello?
Then I will give you a dream, Joshua.
Mr. Norton, have you got company with you? I thought I heard folks talking. Mr. Norton?
No, Mrs. Rutledge. I'm alone. But I must request silence, if you please. I'm drafting a proclamation.
Oh, well, that's all right, then.
I'll need my hat and coat.
What did you say, Mr. Norton?
A proclamation, Mrs. Rutledge. Now, I must hurry, I'm afraid. I'm taking it to the newspaper office. The Evening Bulletin would be best, I think.
A newspaper?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
20 minutes later, at the offices of the San Francisco Evening Bulletin.
And a good day to you, sir. Why, good day, madam. And to you, small child.
Good Lord.
Fitch, was that a story?
Yes, sir. Strangest fellow just walked in with the most peculiar claim.
And who was he?
I've never seen him before, but he looked perfectly normal to me, perfectly polite, just gave me his letter and left. But, well, read it for yourself.
Oh, very well. At the peremptory request of a large number of the citizens of these United States, I, Joshua Norton, formerly of Algoa Bay, Cape of Good Hope, and for the past 9 years and 10 months of San Francisco, California, declare and proclaim myself Emperor of these United States, and in virtue of the authority in me vested, do hereby order and direct the representatives of the different states of the Union to assemble in the Musical Hall of this city on the first day of February next to make such alterations in the existing laws of the Union as may ameliorate the evils under which this country is laboring.
And it's signed, Norton First, Emperor of the United States.
Seem normal, you say, Fitch? I must confess myself surprised. Well, what are you going to do with this drivel?
What am I going to do with it? Why, is that not obvious, sir? I'm going to print it.
Why, good day, gentlemen. Good day to you, sir. Sir, is acceptable. The emperor does not stand on ceremony.
You see, emperor...
Outside on Market Street, Emperor Norton waves happily at his unwitting subjects.
Ahoy there, shipmate. It is I, Norton the First. Your king.
You need to lay off the whiskey, shipmate.
Hello! What a remarkably fine day.
Why, yes it is, sir. Oh,
my goodness, I have some remarkably comely subjects.
Watching him, unnoticed, the Lord of Dreams is joined by his older sister.
What have you got yourself into?
A contest.
I can see that, with Delirium and the twins. But honestly, why?
Death, a young woman with shaggy black hair and gothic eye makeup, wears a black dress appropriate to the period. The silver ankh hangs at her neck.
We don't play Desire and Despair's games. You know that as well as I do.
despair provoked me. She talked about our brother.
So? That's not your fault. It was his decision. He's a grown-up, and I thought you were too.
Good day!
I may have been wrong.
Yes. Yes, it is I.
Just hope you know what you're doing.
I hope that same thing on occasion.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have the time?
Would that I had, dear subject, but sadly the Emperor has had to pawn his pocket watch.
Emperor?
At your service, ma'am.
Goodness.
No curtsy? Dear, I feel a proclamation about manners may be called for.
What have you done to that poor man anyway?
I have given him what many mortals have lived and died for, sister.
Thank you, my subjects. It is time for my royal constitution.
Go on.
I have made him king.
No. Damn.
September 1864. The upstairs offices of one of San Francisco's many newspapers, The Morning Call. Samuel Langhorne Clemens is 30, a young man with red hair, but sporting the mustache for which he will later be recognized as a renowned author. At this point in his career, he is a journalist and not a particularly successful one. The Morning Call is housed in a three-story building which stands next to the ramshackle lodging house where Norton lives. 50 cents a week rent.
Good morning, loyal subjects.
Good morning, Emperor.
Good morning, Mr. Norton. Your Honor.
Emperor Norton himself is terribly thin, leaning on a knobby cane. He's wearing an old Union Army uniform with tarnished golden epaulettes. He now has a full beard. Clemens emerges from the front door, still agitated.
Damn. Oh, hiya, Mr. Norton. How's it going?
Not Mr. Norton, Sam. I really shouldn't have to remind you. The correct form of address is Your Majesty. But everything is going very well, thank you. And you?
Oh, bad. Real bad. I ought to be able to make the story work, but it keeps slipping away from me.
Hey, Emperor!
Where's your harem?
Scoundrels.
Say, have you eaten recently, Your Majesty?
I am a little hungry.
Oh, well, I'm down to my last couple of bucks, but come on, I'll buy you dinner.
Sam, I couldn't accept charity from you.
Oh.
But it does occur to me that you've not paid your imperial taxes this year, and they come to, 50 cents.
Oh, here you go, Your Majesty.
Thank you, Sam. Your receipt.
Now we're both flush. Let us partake of eggs and cold mutton down at the Blue Wing.
Right readily, dear boy.
Norton and Clemens sit in the dining parlor, each with a plate of eggs and cold mutton. Norton has a beer with his meal. Clemens, a large whiskey.
I hesitate to tell you this, Sam, but there are certain individuals who have accused me of, being mad.
You shock me, Your Majesty.
Well, I think perhaps it has something to do with the bridge I've commanded to be built across the bay to Oakland.
A bridge, huh?
San Francisco needs bridges, Sam. People need bridges.
True. Say, Emperor, do you want to hear a funny story?
I don't mind if I do, young Sam.
So, there's a fella, Smiley, who had a frog called